All right, welcome to Thursday. It's Friday Eve. Welcome on Wisconsin's back. Afternoon News.
Yeah, it's your Monday.
Yeah, it is. 2-day work week, though. That's pretty good stuff. All right, let's get to what we're tracking today.
This is the 3 at 3 on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
Number one, John, the government shutdown is over. The president signed it late last night, pointing the blame at Democrats that this had to last 43 days.
Sign a bill exactly like we asked Democrats to send us all along many days ago. This cost the country $1.5 trillion, this little excursion that they took us on.
Wisconsin's Democratic Congresswoman Gwen Moore shared why she voted no.
I will not give my vote to the Republicans so that they can basically end the Affordable Care Act, that they can not address the $1 trillion that they cut in Medicaid. And they haven't responded at all to the $500 billion cut in Medicare.
So within this deal, it guarantees a future Senate vote on the Affordable Care Act subsidies, meaning only a promise vote with the outcome uncertain. Meanwhile, Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman is going to join us live coming up in less than 5 minutes. We'll ask him what he thinks about these words.
Number two, Julia, is pretty interesting stuff. Aaron Rodgers has listed his home in Hobart near Green Bay for sale for $3.7 million. So we're getting to see what it looks like. You can text the word watch to 855-616-1620. That is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line, and you can see the house.
I'm so nosy.
Text the word watch. Me too. You and I were looking through all the pictures. This thing is massive. 4 bedrooms, 7 baths, built in 2003. He paid $1.7 million. Now he's asking $3.7 million. It's incredible. Gourmet kitchen, hand-hewn hickory floors, the lower level, wow. A billiard room with a bar, an all-brick theater room with built-in seating and a wet bar, a fitness room, a steam shower, a wine cooler room. Outside, it's beautifully landscaped with lighted tennis and pickleball courts and a greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You think he has a green thumb?
And no.
A greenhouse? That's the weird one. Is the greenhouse?
And a gym?
Yeah. Gym.
And what do you think about the pickleball
changing
court?
Room.
Ooh, you could do that for your house.
And it looks beautiful. It's lit. It looks really good. So
very nice.
For $3.7 million, you could own Aaron Rodgers' former house. Boy, if those walls could talk. Yeah, a lot of stories. That's for sure. So you can check it out, by the way, if you just go to any website. I found on the JS, you can see all sorts of pictures. It's really, really incredible. All right, the third thing in the 3 at 3. Text the word watch if you want to see my baby grandson in the beautiful onesie that Julia bought for him. He's so cute. He's Theodore John. And oh my gosh, look at the pictures. Text the word watch to 855-616-1620. Thanks for letting me do this. I love this little boy.
Are you kidding me? I was screaming once you texted me. He's in a 620 WTMJ onesie.
It's so, so cute. I'm exhausted. This is a young person's game.
I said that. I said you had twins.
I know, but I was younger. I was younger. And I had the easy part. We were just out there. I'll tell you what, on Monday and Tuesday, I sat with him on my lap for like 8 hours each day while everybody else had to work. It was heaven. It was amazing. Just feeding, burping, sleeping. That's his life. Eat, burp, sleep.
And grow.
Yeah.
That's
text the word watch and you can see little pictures of Theo. He's an amazing little boy.
He's so alert.
And his mom and dad were alert. I thought we'd go out there and they'd be like zombies, but Amy and Walter were not. They're like doing their thing. I mean, Walter's still working 12 hours a day. Amy's nursing and all the stuff that comes along with being a mama. And they're doing great. I love that picture, if that cycles through, of Michelle was holding him while she was working remote.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet.
Yeah,
the 620 onesie's so fun.
It's so cute.
I
love that blue.
What color eyes does he have?
They were blue when he came out, but they're starting to change. So now they're more hazel. So we think they're going to be hazel or brown. So,
congratulations.
All right. Coming up, you teased it, Julia. It's big news. It's the government shutdown is over. U.S. Congressman Glenn Grothman joins us up next on WTMJ.
The government shutdown is over after the president signed it last night, pointing the blame at Democrats for this to have to happen for 43 days. Wisconsin's Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan voted no on the bill, which reopened our government, arguing the legislation does nothing to extend the Affordable Care Act credits. Here he is on the Daily Mic Drop Call to Action podcast.
One thing I'll give him, he is king of, it's the king of grift, and he's been accomplishing it in office. The Republicans are sitting on their fucking hands and doing nothing about it. And that's why I think people got to realize next November is going to be so important to get rid of these assholes and make sure that we can move forward and do something useful.
We reached out to Pocan and we did not hear back, but we did reach out to Congresswoman Gwen Moore. They said that she's unavailable for today to join us on our show.
You know who is available is Congressman Glenn Grothman, represents the 6th District, and he is with us this afternoon. Congressman, thank you so much for being here.
Well, I'm glad to be on the show, and we'll keep it all family-friendly.
No swearing. We do have a 10-second delay.
That's right. When you hear Pocan using that sort of language and Democrats clearly irritated, they feel like they didn't get anything. They held out for all these days. What's your reaction to their reaction?
Well, first of all, they got a lot. The mainstream press isn't reporting it. But we have yet to put together the bills that will, in essence, fund the budget through next September. Some of those bills may well have something in there that's connected with Obamacare. I mean, the whole idea is, though, to keep the government open, not to pass the budget now. Now we start negotiating on the budget. Hopefully we'll get it done by the end of January. The Democrats are going to bring up keeping these credits going. Right now, I think, because it was poorly designed, they're asking for another $34 billion a year to prop up Obamacare. I think that's too much money. We'll see what the Republicans do at the negotiating table on that item. But $34 billion a year, a lot of money.
Congressman Grothman, on top of that, this legislation allows Senate Republicans like Ron Johnson, who were investigated for their possible involvement in the January 6th event called an insurrection, to enrich themselves by suing the federal government. He's suing for more than $1 million or possibly more. Do you agree that that should have been in the legislation?
Well, it shouldn't have been. It was slid in there, and I think a lot of people didn't know it was in there. And as I understand it, there's going to be a bill on the floor next week to take it back out. We'll see whether the Senate goes on with taking it out. I do want to point out a key, what I'll call Democrat victory in there that the press should be talking about, and for whatever reason they're not. You'll recall, if you don't mind, DOGE kind of exposed a lot of federal employees for not doing a whole lot. And we heard a lot about that anecdotally from roommates, from siblings, from people in the same apartment building, same church or whatever, that a lot of people were making six-figure salaries, well over six figures, to not do a lot. A goal of Donald Trump should have been to get rid of those positions. And in this legislation, the Republicans, I think, foolishly agreed that through January 30th, Donald Trump will not be able to remove any more people, which is a huge victory for the Democrats. I know Trump is not going to remove people who he feels are doing something worthwhile, but I thought that was a big defeat for Republicans, or at least conservative Republicans or fiscally responsible Republicans, that when they identify people, particularly in the Department of Defense, not doing a lot, we can't get rid of them. That was a huge story that they're missing.
Congressman Glenn Grothman is with us. The other headline, one of the other headlines today, Congressman, is there's now movement to release the Epstein files. There's enough votes to begin the long procedure that could eventually lead to that. The president's opposed to this. Will you vote to release the files?
Haven't decided yet. I think they should be released, but I haven't decided how I'm going to vote yet. I'll be glad that they're released. How's that?
Why would you vote no at this point? Why are you still on the ledge?
We're going to have a presentation made, I think, by our speaker tomorrow. You know, many, many of the files have been released already. You're reading about them all the time. I think the Oversight Committee is going to release many more of the files, and we'll see what else we have to look at and whether we have to look out for the victims and see if they're adequately protected.
I want to ask you also about the president's approval ratings. They're terrible. Dems won big last Tuesday, governorships, et cetera. Here's my question related to that. You have to run every 2 years. Are you nervous about next year's midterm elections because of how the party has done recently?
Well, 8 years ago, we went through the midterms and didn't do very well. I think Donald Trump is accomplishing a lot more than he did in his first term. His tightened up his speeches a little bit more. He's done a good job, right? He's done a great job on the border. He's done a great job on DEI. I think he has done an adequate job on reining in excessive spending. And we'll just have to see if the Republicans do a good job of getting out their side of the story on this.
You have to run next year. One of the disadvantages of what you do for a living is every 2 years you have to be reelected. Are you nervous about your own campaign, about your prospects because of what's happening?
I've been nervous my whole political career. I mean, I've always been out and about running all over my district. I'm running over my district as much as I can. I'm going to be at a couple events in Ozaukee County tonight, not political events, just supporting some local charities there and meeting people. And like I said, that's what I've done my whole career, and it's kept me in good shape so far. Right now, I believe there are 9 Democrats running against me, though, which does indicate I've got to work twice as hard because of that many people running against me.
Are you surprised that Congressman Tom Tiffany has decided to leave his seat and run for governor? The president really didn't want that to happen. Seats are at a premium. He would be an incumbent. Are you surprised he'll run for governor?
No, not really. Everyone, including me, was encouraging him to run. I think he can run a campaign based on issues and on issues like welfare or property taxes. I think we're going to find that we could use a much more conservative governor at the helm, or even a more moderate governor at the helm, not the radicalness we saw in the past. And I think he can win. And I'll tell you, governor is a pretty good job. So
no doubt it is a good job, but would his body in the governor's seat be more valuable than his body in the U.S. congressional seat?
Well, we have, I think, at least 3 people running for that congressional race already. So I think we can hold on to that district.
The guy who set fire to your office earlier this year very quietly pled no contest. Is that a relief to your staff? What's it like when you go through that? Your staff comes in and some unhinged person has set fire to your building.
Well, I don't know whether there was something wrong with him. You know, when the police and fire department showed up, he was still sitting there in the parking lot telling the police, I'm the one who set the fire. So, you know, I'd like to know what the guy's mental state is. I mean, they found him competent to stand trial. But obviously, you know, he was not what we would consider entirely 100% mentally there. He wouldn't just hang around the parking lot and wait for the police to show up.
I'm really glad that you were safe and your staff wasn't there.
Right. It happened at like 2 or 3 in the morning. We were fortunate in that somebody was delivering these shoppers, you know, that you get
right
early in the morning. And if it weren't for that, I mean, it could have been a much worse fire. You know, my office is in a strip mall, and he lit fire behind the building. So if that guy hadn't been delivering papers at that time, you know, the whole building could have maybe gone up.
U.S. Congressman Glenn Grothman. Congressman, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Glad to be on the show, as always.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Wisconsin's Afternoon News. Jesse Jackson in the hospital with a serious health issue. New information on that coming your way in less than 10 minutes. First, the National Threat Assessment Center releasing groundbreaking reports on the threat assessment in our schools in the United States. Don Mihalik is the ABC News law enforcement contributor and retired senior Secret Service agent. Don, thank you so much for being with us. Let's start with, tell us about the report. Are there key takeaways that, with your background, you're focused on?
Yeah, so the Secret Service put together a study a while ago where they looked at school shooters. And from that study, they found behavioral characteristics that are indicators of a potential pathway to violence that a school shooter could follow. So they put that information together in a report. And over the last decade, they've been out training schools and teaching schools and law enforcement professionals to institute these behavioral threat assessment teams in order to look at students holistically who are potentially exhibiting these behaviors and that could put them on a pathway to violence and mitigation strategies, typically mental health, in order to address these cries for help that come from these students when they're exhibiting these behavioral characteristics. So that information has been pushed out for over a decade. So this study actually looked at if those recommendations, if that information has been successful and is successfully being used amongst school districts across the country. And it turns out that 88% of principals have said not only has this been successful in reducing violence in schools, but it's also been successful in improving school climate. So overall, what the Secret Service has been teaching, schools have been adapting, and it's been improving school safety across the country, which is a tremendous, tremendous thing in this day and age.
So, Don, there's an analysis of what all these school shooters have in common. Are there maybe three or four that you could tell us about?
So most school shooters on a pathway to violence, a couple of indicators out of several. One is there's always potentially a perceived or real grievance. They have an issue with something or somebody, and that issue sort of pushes them along towards the pathway to violence. Another one is a preoccupation with violence. We find most of the school shooters tend to have a preoccupation with violence. That becomes their focus. They research, they read, they study, and these days with the internet, they find a lot of support in online communities about those type of violent behaviors. And another indicator is looking at or drawing things that depict violent acts, drawing guns, drawing plans, and putting that stuff actually down on paper, creating manifestos. All those are three behavioral characteristics that they found prevalent amongst a lot of the individuals they studied in their school shooter study. And things that if you're seeing those behaviors, whereas back in the old days, schools used to do one of two things. They'd either ignore the behavior or they'd expel the student. But there was no mitigation strategy in between. So now what this study does and what these protocols do is they allow schools holistically. They bring in law enforcement. They bring in mental health professionals, school administrators, teachers. They look at the student. They look at the behaviors and they determine, okay, what's going on with this student? What can we do to help this student? And then they try to program the student with the parent's support into places where they can get that help in order to address whatever's going on with them.
Retired senior Secret Service agent Don Mihalik is with us on WTMJ. One of the things as I looked at the report, Don, that stood out to me was the collaboration between educators, mental health professionals, and law enforcement. We talk about that a lot. In the past 10 years, have we gotten better at implementing that sort of collaboration?
Well, according to the report and according to what I've seen, we've got a lot better. And a lot of this was pushed out of after Parkland, after the Parkland incident where that school shooter had 100 and something interactions with law enforcement, had 100 and something interactions with on a school discipline front, but nobody actually connected the dots. Nobody actually was talking to each other. So now what this does is it puts everybody in the room. It has information sharing going on between law enforcement, the school, mental health professionals, so that way they can holistically look at a student and get to the root causes of what's going on, and then, of course, figure out what supports they can actually push towards the student, towards the family. Sometimes there's family dynamics involved that can help the student, help the family, and get them off this pathway to violence and onto a healthier path. So roundly, it's been successful if it's implemented properly and it's used appropriately.
How do Wisconsin school districts like superintendents or local police, how are they getting this information disseminated, especially to Wisconsin?
Well, the Secret Service has done a bunch of road shows where they've gone around the country and they've taught educators, law enforcement professionals about this process. They've also done and they continue to do virtual sessions that are open to educators, mental health professionals, law enforcement, so that way they can learn or update themselves on the best protocols, the best practices in order to do this. And then what happens is some states like Florida, for example, and Pennsylvania have legislated, mandated that the behavioral threat assessment approach is used in schools throughout the states. Other places that don't have a legislative mandate have done it by policy, where individual school districts have adopted it by policy as the program, the protocol that they're using to assess and address potential threatening behavior.
He is Don Mihalik. He is the ABC News law enforcement contributor and a retired senior Secret Service agent. Don, thank you so much.
Civil rights icon Reverend Jesse Jackson is in the hospital right now in Chicago. He continues to battle a rare neurodegenerative brain disorder. It's known as progressive supranuclear palsy. The 84-year-old founder of the Rainbow Push Coalition was first diagnosed several years ago, initially in 2017, with Parkinson's disease. But that wasn't it. He was just diagnosed in April of this year with progressive supranuclear palsy. Unlike Parkinson's, PSP is what it's shortly named, typically causes frequent falls, difficulty looking up or even down, and slurred speech. There's no cure, but there's medications and therapy that can help manage symptoms and maintain a quality of life. Jackson family says that they're in the hospital with him and they appreciate all the outpouring of prayers and support from across the country. The Reverend Jesse Jackson was a protege of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Jackson was actually there when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated April 4th, 1968 in Memphis. They were there to help black sanitation workers who were on strike. They marched with iconic signs that said, "I am a man." Jackson was standing just below the balcony of the Lorraine Motel when the fatal shot rang out. He said he even remembers more than 50 years later the thump that he heard after the shots rang out. Jackson later recalled rushing to Dr. King's side in those tragic final moments, trying to stop the bleeding. Here he is on ABC News.
I hear the thump against the door even now.
Asked him, I said, "Dr. King, do you hear me? Dr. King, do you hear me?" And he didn't say anything, and I tried to hold his head.
Now, Jackson revealed to me what he wished he had told Dr. King that night.
No matter what, we will not turn back. We will not surrender. Through it all, we will keep hope alive.
The event not only shook the nation, but also shaped Jackson's lifelong commitment to civil rights and social justice.
I never heard him describe that. I never realized he literally like held Dr. King.
I know, his head. A solemn moment in American history. So that's the gravity of what we're talking about, why everyone's talking about him being hospitalized. Jesse Jackson has visited Milwaukee countless times for civil rights protests. The Reverend, one visit really stands out for me. In 2014, he came to support the family of Dontre Hamilton. If you remember the story, he's a 31-year-old black man shot and killed by Milwaukee police officer Christopher Manny in Red Arrow Park. Reports show that Starbucks employees had called police about a man sleeping on the bench. The first officer found Hamilton doing nothing wrong. The call wasn't cleared, though, in the dispatch system, according to the Fire and Police Commission. When Officer Manny arrived, he patted Hamilton down against procedure, leading to a struggle where Hamilton was shot 14 times and killed. The case drew a national attention, and Reverend Jackson marched with the Hamilton family demanding justice. Here's part of my report on TMJ4 News a decade ago.
And good evening. Reverend Jackson ended the night here with prayers with the family. He called on everyone in the city of Milwaukee to use Dontre Hamilton's memory as an instrument for peace. Demonstrators ended their night in prayer at Holy Temple Firstborn Missionary Baptist Church, led by an hour-long rally from Reverend Jesse Jackson.
We're driven by a Dontre spirit. They can't shoot that. They can't lock up his spirit.
Nate Hamilton, Dontre's brother, told me at the time, having Reverend Jesse Jackson visit Milwaukee gave his family so much energy to keep pushing on.
Sometimes you get tired, you know, and it's a hard fight, you know, looking for justice. Jesse Jackson is not always going to be available to come to Milwaukee. So we're going to continue to stand as a family, as a city.
The Milwaukee County District Attorney later ruled the shooting was justified, but Officer Manny was fired for not following proper procedure. 3 years after the deadly shooting in 2017, the city reached a $2.3 million settlement with Hamilton's family, bringing some closure, but leaving ongoing calls for police reform and accountability. By the way, Reverend Jackson said this about criticism when he came up to Milwaukee from Chicago.
Reverend Jackson also addressed the criticism at the pulpit that this is a fight that's not happening in Chicago.
Why are you up here? You should just have some leaders from Milwaukee to do all the talking. Long as the Green Bay Packers can get players from everywhere, we can get freedom fighters from everywhere.
I also covered Reverend Jackson when I worked behind the scenes in Chicago in the early 2000s. If you have not been to the Rainbow Push Coalition, it's fantastic. It's a civil rights and social justice organization founded by Reverend Jackson. It advocates for racial equality, economic justice, political empowerment. Very, very well organized. And I remember one time when I interviewed Reverend Jackson in a hallway at the Rainbow Push Coalition, and no one moved. Everyone stood still. You could hear a pin drop until the interview was over. He's highly, highly respected, and now you see why, obviously. By the way, his son, Jesse Jackson Jr., is actually exploring a run right now, John, to regain his old congressional seat in Illinois. It'd be a big political comeback for his son, Jesse Jackson Jr., as he served more than 2 years in prison for misusing campaign funds, and he was released from federal prison in 2015. At this hour, Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr. is hospitalized, and he is 84 years old.
Good perspective. He's got a long history, including here in Wisconsin. 10 years ago was Dontre Hamilton. Can you believe that?
Oh, I know. You should have seen how little I looked 10 years ago.
All of us.
In my report.
Looked a little different. It is 356 at WTMJ.